Brett, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
In vertical, as we call it, native format.
Cell phone format. Yes. That makes me twitch on so many levels.
Yes, so we'll talk about that. But so, cat in the background, let's acknowledge that. I'm Eben Matthews.
Adam Martin.
We are M2.
Yep.
And this is the Myth Makers podcast. If you're listening in audio format, we're also recording in vertical format on the phone, which is going to go onto our new Instagram TV channel.
Yes.
So that is
first one of those.
It will be the first one of these. We got a couple of videos
episode
up there.
Episode 45
of the podcast. Yes. So as you just said, now officially older than
Older than us.
That's, yes.
Me. Well me both, at least.
Yes. No, true. It was me. It was hey. Definitely both of us. Much older than both of us. but yeah, 45 weeks of podcasting.
Honey. That's actually pretty good. You
know, that's not a bad milestone. I think 52 will need like a, you know,
there'll be something special there.
Something. Yes.
Right. It's like the God of Golden anniversary of, well, yes.
The Gun of Golden?
Gun of Golden? The Golden Gun of...
The Golden Gun anniversary?
I don't know.
I mean, the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, well, 50th wedding anniversary is gold.
Is gold.
So I feel like, the 52 is the 1 year mark.
Yes.
It's probably something to that.
Something, yeah. I don't know. Like, in wedding terms, what would be your 1 year anniversary? It's like the, you know...
1 year is nothing. 1 year is like...
Here's the thumbs up anniversary.
Thumbs up. Well done.
Yes, good job. See you next year.
We just celebrated 21, actually.
Well, not...
me and my wife celebrated 21 on the 21st, which was kind of nice.
Yes,
felt oddly appropriate. It was
very much so.
Very good.
I just had a birthday. Yeah, we've got kids having birthdays momentarily as well. Cat is going crazy in
cat
the background.
Cat is going absolutely crazy. The cat is, I think, part Siamese and is just the loudest cat I have ever experienced in my life.
Yes.
So forgive the incessant mewling that's happening.
She wants to be a podcaster, apparently.
He does. It's all right. His name is Bagheera.
Mm-hmm.
And just to prove there is, in fact, a cat.
Yes.
And we're not it's not some weird recording.
Yes.
There you go.
There you go.
Cat. And there he goes. Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yes. Long preamble to say again, welcome to Mythmakers episode number 45.
Yep.
If you're new to the show, we talk about storytelling and the process of storytelling, considerations around storytelling as it relates to production of all sorts of different types of media, the things that we're excited about, sometimes
things we're interested in.
Actually, a lot of the time. And all that good stuff as we go about creating a new media empire around all this fun stuff.
Although it has to be said, we've been geeking out far less recently because Star Wars is generally a geekable topic.
Yep.
And frankly, they've been a little off the mark recently.
Yeah,
so, we'll see what happens. JJ will reignite that particular flame, I'm sure. What we see in a month's time is Empire Strikes Back at the Hollywood Bowl with live orchestra.
We again is
conducted
by John Williams, and
then we're seeing John Williams again at the end of the summer.
I feel like someone's missing these things. I think "we" is the wrong term in this particular situation. You say
"we" in terms of members of this household, namely myself and my
so
children.
So you're saying you are going to see this thing with other people that you know, and wouldn't I love to go see these things? And the answer, of course, is yes.
Yes.
But you'll have to tell us all about it. Anyway,
that'll be one of the let's live stream. One of these
I will
things. It'll be amazing.
Wash the salt out of my wounds after the show. How was this week for you?
This week was good. It's busy. Full shooting week on Future Man, which has been great. Very busy. Lots of stuff going on. Lots of fun. Come shooting in stage on our standing sets for the 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And some challenges around that, but also some very, very cool looking stuff. And then, as is usually the case, we spent 2 days in what is literally a mine. a quarry, actually. Right. A gigantic sand pit up in Simi Valley, where they're apparently shooting Captain Marvel just up the road. But this enormous, it was up in the mountains, and it was apparently previously at the bottom of the ocean somehow. And it's just a gigantic piece of sand.
It was previously at the bottom of the ocean somehow. Yes,
because you're walking through these rocks, and you find shells in everything. And all the rock is strata. And I think it actually, I think the San Andreas Fault runs right along there, so I think this whole thing has been pushed up.
Okay, so when we say previously, we're talking millennia. We're not
millennia.
Somehow, yesterday, 5 years ago, this was all underwater.
No.
Yeah,
we're talking. We're talking geological time.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Got it. Yeah. So there were some
really
giant,
stunning creatures. Very, very cool. Yeah. Lots of fun stuff. We were just watching some dailies, actually.
Yes. Very funny.
It's great. Yeah. It's great. Up until I got home at 2 a.m. on Saturday morning. It's always the fun part of that.
Yes. Well, I know that there are weeks, and this was one of them, where you're just not going to get a hold of Adam very much because the production schedule is insane.
It's crazy. And then we're shooting in a quarry which has no cell phone service.
Exactly.
So literally, as I'm driving into work, arriving there about 6:30, it dies. And then I pick it up again about 9 when I leave, and it comes back. It's not very conducive to social life, as you said.
Yes,
indeed. How's it going? Yes.
Good. So, fun week. Two highlights. One is we are literally inching across the finish line to wrapping up the deal that we've been working on for about a month now. And it's all going great. We're kind of all now on the same page about what we're doing and how we're doing it and all of that, which is great. Of course, what you want in a deal when you're making stuff with partners.
Yes.
We're getting that wrapped up, and also just getting kind of very excited about that project in general. So, we've actually been
spending on that tonight. Exactly.
Over the course, it's an interesting, often you would try to make the deal first, but in this case, we feel comfortable with these guys and they feel comfortable with us. And given what we're trying to accomplish, we actually needed to just go ahead and get into it. So we've been working on it already, and we've kind of broken a bunch of story and
A lot of the scripts for the first seasons of the show, actually, of the various series have been broken and almost, really mapped out to a significant degree, which is great. Yeah. And then going through tonight was going through specifically the kind of production aspects of what this is going
to
entail.
And before we go there, so spending this week wrapping that stuff up. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I just want to say for anyone that's been tracking, we also turned in all of our assets for the impending launch of Dead Town Breakout Season 2 on the Yarn platform. So what's actually going to happen there, we will find out tomorrow and Tuesday what the official launch schedule is. Mm-hmm. And so we will, of course, communicate that everywhere that we can. what's going to happen there is we're actually going to relaunch a remastered version of season one. So we added a new episode and some new pieces and kind of tweaked some stuff in the scripts themselves. So there'll be a slightly remastered
version, episode zero,
and some new media pieces that are in the first couple of episodes and stuff. So it's a kind of, I think, richer, better version of what was already there for season one. And then that's going to lead directly into season two, which is brand new, and it's got some really cool stuff in it. So this week I also wrapped up delivering that stuff, but also finishing up some little animated bits that's going to be part of that season.
Very exciting.
And this was fun because, when we did this stuff for season one, as a side note, we did go through our kind of traditional sound design process, and we worked with our kind of longtime collaborators for sound design. And so in this one, I thought that's what we were going to end up doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that there's this one sequence where one of the characters is struggling with a zombie. Yeah. And so I figured initially, we'll send that to them and they'll put it together as they always have, and it'll be brilliant.
Yeah.
And then, I was working on it and just had this kind of wild thought of hey, this is this kind of long shot down a hallway, sort of grainy, bad reception. Mm-hmm. How much production value does this need? And actually, maybe it's better
if it's kind of
raw, right?
Exactly.
So I just jumped on the mic, actually on my phone, just jumped on there and started making some zombie growls.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Did some breathing heavy, and then kind of cut it all together and threw a bad filter on it, and adjusted levels a little bit, and I'm like, actually, this works great.
For
this particular thing, like, this works, and it's done. So
love it.
So, you know, sometimes just do it.
Yes. But
So I thought that was kind of fun, and you know, it's the, you know, I think it's this you know, it was a moment for me where I think sometimes it's important to remember, and this ties into what we're going to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. But it's important to remember that, you know, sometimes there is sort of a quick, easy, and dirty way that absolutely delivers what needs to be delivered.
Yes.
Even though the first kind of pass of thinking is like, oh, well, there's
this process
it needs to go through, and it doesn't always have to do that in order to get it where it needs to be and what you need it, what it actually wants to be at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that directly leads into tonight's topic.
Yes.
Which came about actually in talking about the current production.
Yep. And how to shoot and what we're doing and what we're doing doing tonight with us.
Exactly.
Well.
So the trade-offs between the creative process and the writing and concepting phase versus the realities of production and sort of the trade-off between those two things.
Yes.
So very much talking about that in the context of what we're working on. And then that led to some additional discussion, and without, you know, naming names or getting specific, you know, just in the, you know, how that compares to kind of film and television as well,
mm-hmm.
in the process where, you know, where a show may go, you know, over budget or over schedule or start to have some kind of production challenges,
right,
where those things aren't as finely tuned as they could be. And so that sort of,
exactly.
You know, so if you
and then
that
also loop back around to our own conversations and having to, you know, and comic production, funny enough.
Like, exactly.
It was a broad discussion in the car, and then struck us as being something that would be worth discussing.
So
this is a constant push and pull.
Exactly. So as context, I mean, from the film TV side, like, mm-hmm. what do you feel like you can share that sort of sets the stage for some of that?
Yeah, so I think there's always the... you know, there's always the need and the desire from a creative point of view to have to be bigger, better, funnier, whatever that might be, than the competition, because obviously that's how you stand out. So this is what people are looking for, and the audiences are becoming obviously much more sophisticated. And so I think they're expecting things to look and feel a certain way when they're plugging into something. And I think that there is often then in production a conflict between what the creators of a show want to put up on screen and then the limitations being put on them by studio or network in terms of what they can then actually afford to put up on screen.
Right.
And that's where, you know, there's this constant kind of push and pull between creative and production, and when that's working well, it's a wonderful thing, because, you know, typically speaking, when it's working well, typically speaking, what will happen is, you know, the initial pass of the script will be whatever the writers want to do, and it's great, it's huge, it's fun, it's limitless, just go crazy.
Yes.
And then that script will come to an assistant director like myself, and a line producer, and a production manager, and we will then look at it, and we'll break it down, and we'll say, wow, okay, well, so actually to produce this script is going to take 84 hours to shoot and is going to be $300,000 more than we would normally want to spend on this.
Right.
So how do we get this script into a shape that is now actual manageable within the 60 hours we want to spend shooting it and pull $300,000 out of the budget, as it were? And so this is then becomes, there's then a conversation with the EPs and the writer and us, and we talk about it and say, hey, well, look, let's take, as opposed to having this conversation split, you know, outside and inside, when the outside is a location, the inside is a house that we have on stage, let's not do that. Let's put it both inside. Or suppose we're going to three different locations for these three different pieces. Actually, you can tell that same story in one location, and therefore you have the savings that come along with that. And so it's that kind of thing. So it becomes a conversation about how do we still tell this story and get the beats that we need, or the jokes, or the drama, or whatever it might be, but doing that in a way that allows us to exist within the financial infrastructure that is in place.
That is necessary that to is produce this
necessary
show.
To produce a show. Yeah. And until, you know, there's obviously, and of course, once you are a runaway hit, a lot of those shackles kind of fall away.
Right.
Not even shackles, I would say parameters mm-hmm. fall away.
For better and for worse, I think.
And exactly. Yes. Sometimes yeah. that can be a real problem. Michael Bay, I think, is actually, I think some directors are better when they have parameters put on them. And mm-hmm. I think some of Bay's earlier movies are better than some of the later ones, certainly the Transformers thing, because yeah. there were parameters put in them.
Yeah.
When he has limitless resources, there's no need to kind of restrain anything, right. and that can be tricky.
Well,
and I think you see that again and again
yeah.
With filmmakers who do a very good job on a smaller scale and mm-hmm. then lose their way on larger.
Well, and I think, you know, just in what we were going through tonight, I mean, I think that's a great kind of, you know, kind of background for the conversation, because I think it applies from kind of the biggest component of the entertainment industry with film and television down to, you know, some of the more, you know, kind of the smaller pieces of the larger industry, like comics or, you know, some mm-hmm. of this new media stuff that we're working on. So, you know, places where you especially don't have that scale, then I think it is the, you know, we were kind of talking about this with our discussion around Upgrade as well,
yes.
where it's like, you know,
yes.
the Blumhouse movies and other things where it's like, you know, the spectacle, the thing that gets you engaged is not, you know, how big it is. It's the creative problem solving that went into figuring out how to tell this story in the most effective, right. most compelling way possible. And so, you know, just as an example, without spoiling anything, like the stuff that we're working on tonight, you know, we had initially written a sequence that, you know, had a character kind of need to go from one room to another room to another room.
Right.
And there was a reason for that in the story. And then, you know, talking through it tonight, we realized, you know, like, yes, that would still work in the story. There's not actually a story reason not to do it. But when looking at the realities of getting that shot and made and produced the way that we would then want it to be to
right.
fulfill on that piece of story, like that becomes problematic given the scope of the rest of what we're trying to
right.
do.
And
so
exactly.
So then the question becomes, you know, do you need to rewrite that? Do you need to reconceive that? Does it,
mm-hmm.
is there a different solution? And so then it's this, you know, back and forth of like
right.
figuring out like what's now the creative way to still tell this story.
Right. And still get these beats across, but do it in a way that is
now feasible.
Actually manageable given the production that we are going to be.
Exactly.
Getting, you know,
exactly. So,
and they're always, the
yeah.
nice thing is 99 times out of 100, the answer is yes, there's a way of doing that.
Yes.
It requires a bit of reconceiving and a
mm-hmm.
bit of reimagining, but the tweaks that we've made to the script
yep.
are negligible in the broader context.
I think generally that is what I feel tends to be the case, where either the net result of that process is either it didn't really matter, but it made it manageable from a production side, or you actually end up in a place that's better because
mm-hmm.
you had to think creatively and solve problems
yes.
that you didn't realize that you were going to have to solve.
Right.
And so sometimes that necessitates a sort of way of rethinking, like, well, okay, if I can't do this thing that I initially wanted to do, how do we do something that's still cool and that, you know, does
right.
not only deliver the story, but is, you know, kind of, you know, compelling and engaging and doesn't
yes.
feel like a trade-off or a concession,
right, exactly.
but instead is, you know, feels like a conscious choice, which it is ultimately,
right.
but it's, you know, driven by this kind of necessitated, you know, point of view.
Yes.
And I feel like in this case, like as we kind of came around to the solution,
mm-hmm.
it is actually going to play potentially better than it would have.
Yes.
You know, in the initial conception.
Because I think ultimately, you know, it's an audience doesn't care if you are moving from one room to another room to another room.
Right.
If they're engaged by the character
mm-hmm.
and they're engaged by the claustrophobia of one room and you can
right.
achieve an effect in that one room, they don't care and
yeah.
they don't know
right.
that you're trading off. By the time it
exactly.
hits the screen, They have no idea what went on behind
yeah.
that. So all they care about is, am I in this moment? Do I care about this character? What's happening?
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, you've won.
Yes.
And if you've done it in one room as opposed to three, well, then great. You've
yeah.
won that end as well, and you've made
yeah.
it doable in a way. I remember this story I heard about Akira Kurosawa.
Mm.
Talking about, I think it was the movie Ran that he
yes.
did. It's a fantastic battle.
Movie,
you know,
yeah.
wonderful, wonderful film.
Yeah.
But these great, like, sweeping samurai charges with all these colors and this thing. And he was asked this one particularly high, kind of beautiful shot. And he was asked, well, how did you pick the framing? Because it's so perfect and you have the things. And he goes, I got the framing because if I panned 2 inches to the left there, I would have seen the school. And if I panned 2 inches to the right, I would have seen the power station. And so this was my frame.
This is the frame, yeah.
And it worked amazingly. And when those things are out of the frame, you don't care.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think that's the stuff. And I think what's been actually good for us, and I think, look, I think good writers are always able to solve these problems. And I've seen it again and again and again on the shows that I've done. I think what's been useful for us is having to produce and having to write multiple comic scripts where you are both in traditional and in obviously Macroverse format, where you are significantly limited in the amount of story you can tell on any one page.
Yes.
So unlike a movie where you say he walks in the room, he lights a cigarette, he walks across, he opens the fridge, he takes out a beer, he cracks the beer, he turns around and says hello to the shadowy figure in the corner, that you can shoot in a movie and that's great. That needs to be a half a page, if that, maybe two panels of a comic script to get into that same contradiction, and then you need to continue the scene from there.
It's a different economy for sure.
You know, but so I think the education that we have had doing that, having to do that kind of paring down of story and shape this stuff and work out, oh God, this is too many lines of dialogue for this panel. Then how do we say the same thing but do it in two lines, not three?
Right.
All that kind of process, I think, is incredibly valuable when you are then translating it, you know, all through other
people. No, 100%. And I think, you know, it's a, you know, to clarify for anyone that doesn't know this. So, you know, we have our own comics platform that we've invented and is out right now called Macroverse. So Macroverse allows you to do things with digital comic storytelling that you can't do on a printed page. So, you know, it does give us a little more leeway and flexibility with
a little more cinematic feel to it, honestly,
how the storytelling works. But, you know, the fundamentals of, you know, how comics work are still kind of built in and very intentionally, you know, part of the way that this thing works. And then we also have just written a 3-issue comic series, which is in the final stages at last of being wrapped up and produced as far as the art and the you know, kind of finish on that whole storyline. And it was very interesting kind of at that time, especially as we were writing both simultaneously, kind of jumping back and forth and very much in the traditional print format, you know, having to, you know, kind of, again, have this sort of big picture of like, okay, here's what we want to do here. And then now very, you know, realistically how much fits on any particular page. And there are some, you know, you don't want to be the writer that's asking your artist to try to put 10 panels on a page. Like that just doesn't work. And then
unless you're going for a very specific effect, like we have a couple of beats of those things where it is. And I think, you know, you look at Dark Knight Returns or something, you've got this incredible.
But that's
a very specific style. And you do that intentionally. You can't just squash
it. It's not just because I'm desperate to get, you know, more words on this page. It's absolutely for a storytelling effect. And then I'll say, you know, in this process as well, and actually in both formats, it's something that Doug Wagner said on the episode where we interviewed him, that, you know, when the art comes back, it's, you're doing another draft of the script when you're putting it all together and you're trying to actually look for what can I take out from the dialogue where the visual is actually telling the story already. So the more you can kind of reduce that and still deliver the story that you want to tell, often the better. And then with Deadtown in particular too, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, I started realizing it's like one of the beautiful things about working with the artist on Deadtown, Stephen Perkins, is that Stephen actually brings yet sort of another eye to that process. So we'll write, you know, kind of what our picture of a particular scene is. And then often he'll come back with, you know, sort of a, in some cases, simplified version of that sequence.
Yes.
And most of the time it's as impactful or better than it was as initially written. And it's because he's putting it through his lens of, you know, how do I tell this story, but also, again, from a very much kind of a creative mixed with production reality of, if I do it the way it was written, it's going to take me, you know, 10 drawings to do it. If I do it this slightly modified way, I can do it with 7,
right,
and still deliver the same impact with, you know, a third less work.
Exactly.
You know, honestly, that's something we're all on board for. Right. So, so, you know, and then I can say, you know, for myself as an illustrator over the years, and then as we've been writing and then, you know, getting into more kind of media production, the other factor, which I think is true across the board, no matter what media, at least we've worked in, is, you know, being able to kind of very intentionally pick and choose your kind of high impact moments. So, you know, even on the comics page, it's like you're kind of writing to and around, this is going to be a full page. That's going to be this kind of big, you know, yes, important, you know, kind of dynamic splash page moment, or this is the big action sequence in, right, this, you know, live action piece or animated piece, or, you know, in the case of what we're working on right now, it's like, okay, this is going to be the most complicated, you know, piece of video
we have to go and shoot.
So, you know, let's scale back some of the other stuff, right, and get creative, exactly, about how to deal with some of the other stuff that doesn't require that much, so that we can, you know,
we
really
put our
effort
and
here.
Fantastic.
And our theory and belief is that across the board in all these mediums, you're actually, those kind of key moments, those really, you know, highly produced or highly, you know, executed elements, do help kind of bring the audience into the same space that you're kind of living in as the creator, which is this kind of bigger, more, you know, more, right, more spectacular world, even when a lot of it ends up being a lot simpler because you've created this sort of context.
Yes,
for
exactly,
this is the world that we're living in. Now we can, you know, have, right, two people sitting in a room talking to each other
because you know that there's this bigger world. Outside. And this was, I mean, something very interesting on Future Man. We've just been, yeah, kind of dealing with them with our current director, who is, I think, excellent. But he's and exactly in line with what the showrunners want, mm-hmm, where it is our sets are now, you know, a little more, somewhat more contained than they were season one. But so using a handful of shots to bring you into sequences that have VFX that show the scale of the world, mm-hmm, so that by the time you then land in two people talking, you know that there is this gigantic thing outside the window.
Yeah.
And looking to do that without, you know, you do that a few times and you get to tell that story very effectively. You don't need to shoot it every single,
right,
shot,
mm-hmm,
you know, because that, you know, unless you do, in which case that's right, a choice you're making, and then you're losing something else,
right,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah, and I think, oops, sorry, sometimes it is approached as a kind of negative, detrimental process. I've certainly been on those productions. This is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Future Man is certainly not one of them. It's everyone's on the same page as far as getting the thing, which is wonderful. But I've been on those shows where the second there's any conversation about this is too big, the writers and showrunners squeal and shut down. And
right,
that's not actually helpful. And funnily enough, the last show that the writer did that on got canned.
Man.
And, you know, there's a lesson to be learned there. There is, mm-hmm, definitely, you know, and TV-wise, there's definitely that kind of middle class of show, which is not the runaway hit, in which case,
right,
you have carte blanche.
Right.
And it's not the total failure, in which case you're just gone, and that's,
right,
fine, that's okay, you know what that is. There is this kind of middle ground of show, whereas if you're kind of bumping along, in network terms at least, with adequate ratings, nothing too special. But if you're the non-squeaky wheel in that environment, mm-hmm, if you're coming in on budget and the scripts are early and the network likes you and everything's great and it's a low drama set and all those things,
right,
it's just this series of check marks in your favor. So it becomes a much easier decision to say, oh yeah, you know what? Ah, it's fun. It's taking a need for us. It's good. Let's just keep it
let's
going for a season,
yeah,
and then we'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you get something out of that process.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the last show that I was on full time had a number of issues around that, and it went away and then got canned, and then I don't know what the show I was doing, and I don't, because,
right,
there was some, you know, there was some trouble there and there were some bridges burnt there, and,
yeah,
it gets interesting and unfortunate watching that process, you know,
right,
because it's not it's not, you don't have to do that, basically.
Yeah. No, it, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's interesting. I mean, it's like I actually am so far on the other side at this point that it's hard for me to even relate back to what it would be like or what it is like to not be thinking about the whole picture.
Right.
So, you know, it feels to me like, you know, if you're someone that, you know, I guess if you're someone that wants to just kind of work for other people, then you can kind of just let someone else try to worry about that stuff.
Right.
And actually I would say in my brief foray into the video game world, you know, the part that was actually the most challenging for me was I felt like I didn't have enough insight into the bigger picture of the production. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like it was more like, okay, here are these kind of deadlines and things I need to do within a particular time frame. But it was very hard for me to kind of see the macro, kind of like, how does this all fit into the big picture? And, you know, what happens a month from now? And, you know, why is what we're doing over here not seeming to have an impact on, you know, what's happening on the development side over here? You know, those sorts of things.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, that kind of drove me a little bit crazy. And I think it is, you know, for people that are sort of in the mindset of like wanting to make stuff, I think you just have to kind of find this sort of natural way of thinking or develop this way of thinking, which is, you know, yes, you want to have this sort of, you know, fully open, unfettered creative process. But there is a sort of, you know, two to three to four dimensional way of kind of wrapping your mind, yes, around that, where you're thinking about not just the creative, but also, you know, how is it actually going to get made? And then ultimately, right, how is it going to get marketed? Right. And how is it going to get in front of people? And just kind of the whole picture of, yes, the kind of life cycle of this thing.
Right.
And I do actually think that, you know, many of the people that we, certainly that I personally, but I think that, you know, kind of fandom in general kind of looks to actually are those people. So, you know, whether it's the Walt Disney's of the world or the Kevin Feige's of the world, mm-hmm, it's like, you know, these are people that do kind of function along that scale where, right, you're kind of looking at the whole picture, not just your tiny piece of,
yeah,
it.
And I think that is the difference, certainly in terms of writers. I think, you know, when you start up a TV show, you're in a startup, mm-hmm, is what you're in.
Yeah.
And you have now become the CEO of this, you know, 10 episodes of a TV show at $2.5 million a piece. What, right, is that? $25 million, mm-hmm, right? So you are now the CEO of a $25 million startup.
Yeah.
That has 5 months or so to, mm-hmm, produce its product and get it out there and then, right, see what happens.
And a couple hundred people. Or
and
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And
yeah,
the, what is interesting is that it's the people, there are a particular set of skills that it takes to run a business in that way.
Right.
And those are not always the same skills that it takes to write great scripts.
Right.
And yet the way TV especially works, and this is actually maybe a conversation for another time, but it's the way TV especially works is you get promoted to the position of showrunner because of your writing talent, mm-hmm, not because of your managerial talent. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, mm-hmm, why the top showrunners are few and far between and massively in demand.
Right. Because they can do both.
Because they can do both. Yeah. And I've been very, very lucky to have the experience of, and I'm having it now, the experience of working with people that are able to juggle those, both, all those balls.
Yes.
And I've seen it repeatedly before. And then I've also witnessed situations where that's not the case. And,
right,
that's just all valuable lessons. But I think, mm-hmm, when it's not the case, it's because they are not realizing the machine, this company that they are now running, mm-hmm, they're not approaching it from that perspective.
Yeah, just it's interesting because I think anecdotally, I mean, certainly I don't have this inside information. You may have a little more of it than I do, but anecdotally, I would be curious of, you know, the top shows, like the biggest shows, mm-hmm, from your Game of Thrones on down. I would be suspicious that those actually fall into those categories, that it, you know, to some degree, that the most successful, you know, kind of shows are actually the reason that superstar showrunners happen,
right,
is because they have this ability to craft these kind of combination of big story with, you know, really complicated, interesting, well-produced content. So I think
it's interesting, actually. And with the Game of Thrones, I do remember like reading a thing about season two, where like in season two of Game of Thrones, they didn't actually give them any more money, but they had that. They had the Battle of Blackwater to produce at the end of it. And so like, well, great, you're going to have to work out how to do that gigantic ship battle with wildfire destroying everything. And still produce a season that is on the scale that we want. And funnily enough, season two was my least favorite. Like, I didn't like the second book, and I didn't like season two of the show. So I'm kind of intrigued to see. You're absolutely right. It'd be very interesting to see what they did.
But I mean, even just thinking back to like, you know, the Buffys and you know, kind of the what, at least where I started to become aware of showrunner as kind of star, I guess, you know, that, you know, J.J. Abrams with, you know, Lost, and Damon Lindelof with Lost, and the, you know, kind of the Buffys of the world, and like that sort of rise of the, you know, the, again, the showrunner,
the showrunner star,
you know, it just, I can't think of someone in that, bucket that doesn't seem to have that combination of skills, which is sort of an interesting
case study. I'm sure.
So, interesting. So anything else about that for the,
I don't think so. No, at some point there'll be lots more.
So, so hopefully we can finally make some, official announcements this coming week. It's looking good. It's all happening. It's just looking good.
Whether we can actually say anything about it. You know, so Dead Town is a definite, obviously. It's still going on the Macroburst app as well.
Quick updates. I mean, we're episode 1 through 8 of Dead Town is live on Macroburst right now. You can download that on the App Store or Google Play. You can also find the website for Macroburst at macroburst.media or on social media at Macroburst app. M2, as always, is at M2 Action all over social media. We have started this Instagram TV channel now as well, so more vertical video in our future and yours.
I hate vertical video. It goes against everything.
Yes.
But see, as Edward said, if I can wrap my head around it being like, this is the native format for this, then that's fair enough.
Exactly.
I can do that. I can do that.
This is the IMAX of iPhone video. You know, it's the native format for phone video. So, you know, embrace it.
I have
embrace
no
it, use it to our advantage. Take over the world.
Definitely.
What else? If you like the podcast version, definitely please
like
rate
it,
review it.
Please,
good stuff. It actually really does make a difference to help other people find the show. So, you know, letting the ratings and reviews is one of the things that, you know, helps the app store know, like, hey, show this to people.
Yes,
so we appreciate that. And we'll be back next week with lots more to talk about. So
indeed. Evan, except Hujmaflip.
So yes.
I know.
So what is a Hujmaflip again?
Hujmaflip is whatever's top of the mind right now, but I can't remember the name for it.
The British whatchamacallit.
Exactly.
Very good.
So you were actually just showing me.
So thank you for reminding me, because I actually really am excited about this and want everyone to see it. So before we say goodbye, my Hujmaflip of the week, I came across randomly a couple days ago. It's a video on Vimeo, and I'll also put a link to it on the show notes on the podcast and in the description on the video. But it's called the Batman Dance Party. And it's amazing. It's a little animated piece set to the 1960s Batman music, and basically it looks like claymation. If it is CG, they've done a beautiful job of selling like some fingerprints and stuff in the clay, which is the one thing that makes me wonder if it's actually real. Now it makes me want to go find something behind the scenes. But anyway, it's a, you know, sort of what, 3 minute, you know, kind of dance party of all of the key Batman characters and the entire Rogues Thrones gallery with a very funny and special moment with Alfred, a kind of dark, twisted in the best possible way ending. Cannot recommend it enough.
Oh, great.
Just 3 minutes of pure joy in my world. So definitely find that. And again, we'll put some links out for people, but it is well worth 3 minutes of your time. It's very fun. And for you, sir?
For me, actually, funny enough, it's totally the opposite direction, and it's something that most people will never see. It is a piece of equipment that I saw we used on Friday on set, and I haven't seen it, this particular combination, used in 18 years.
Oh, wow.
It happens occasionally, but essentially you have, it's just me just geeking out on the whole filmmaking side of things, because I love it.
Yes.
so you have, there are two pieces of equipment. You have a crane, which is the old-fashioned cranes with these big truck-mounted things, and you would have your camera and you'd have your operator behind the thing, and they would go up in the air on this platform with the focus puller when they needed that, and they could then shoot this thing on this enormous kind of large pickup truck that could move around and do stuff, and you had this big heavy crane that you could then put up in a position, and, and it was great. Great tool, decades of use out of that stuff.
Yes, of course.
And then that has more or less been replaced by things called technocranes, which are the same crane, except they can telescope. So they literally are like out of each other. They're all counterbalanced. And so you get those wonderful kind of, you can push a technocrane in through a window and you can tell around and you can bring it out of the window and up and through and do amazing shots, you know, with that. It's a, it's an incredible tool. And a couple times now, twice, and we did it yesterday, Friday, was we took a technocrane and we put it where you would normally put the camera on a Titan crane, which is the truck mounted thing.
That's amazing.
And so you end up with this device that can move in three axes.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, it,
that's, I'm just totally that's awesome. Geeking out. Yeah.
I may even have a couple of photos I can put up. Actually, I should include those in that. Yes. I did take a couple of things because it's just great. And it's, the first time I saw it used, it was like, we took it up through a second story window and they pushed it in through the window of somebody's living room. And like there was a corridor at the back of it and they had it in the kitchen. And so this person walked out of the corridor, out of the kitchen, down the corridor, chatted and then out on the balcony. And then it came out of the balcony and came up. Like, it was just these spectacular shots. Yeah. And so it was really cool seeing that again after a long time.
That was
and
really cool.
Just makes me want to...
Use it
more. So yes,
very cool. Is there a name that is described to that?
So no, there really isn't. Like it's not a. It's just a combination of a Titan crane and a Techno crane, basically. And you put that. It's there's no real.
I will christen it the Techno Titan.
Yes. Yes. T squared.
Yes.
Anyway. Geeking out. Totally geeking out over equipment.
That's awesome.
And it is always like I love. I will watch movies in the place of, how do they do that shot? How do they make that shot? Oh, that's really cool. I wonder how they did that.
Yeah.
And then every now and then stuff comes along like, I have no clue how they did that.
Yeah.
I love it when that happens.
Yes.
Although it does distract me from the movie slightly. But I'm always like, oops, sorry. I keep throwing pennies around. Just great. So anyway. Yeah. That was my Hujama
flip. That's very cool.
Yes. I will send a picture along so we can put, we'll put a picture.
Yes. Okay, cool. So we'll link to a picture or do something here. Yeah. Yes. Very cool. That sounds awesome.
Yep.
I love it. And on that note, we will wrap up for this week. We'll be back next week.
Have a great week.
Have a great week. Go make something.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.